जयो राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधमाधव कुंज बिहारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर थारी जय गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर थारी यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यमुना तीरा वन चारी यमुना तीरा वन चारी जयो राधो माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधो माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर थारी जयो गोपीजन वल्लभ गिरिवर थारी यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यशोदा नंदना ब्रज जन रंजना यमुना तीरा वन चारी यमुना तीरा वन चारी जयो राधो माधव कुंज बिहारी जयो राधो माधव कुंज बिहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरस्तु श्री श्रीमरेशि भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की जय गीताय गौर प्रेमानंदे हरि हरि बोल समवेत भक्त वृंद की जय आ गोविष्ठ श्री श्री गुरु गौरांग ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 10, Deliverance of the Yamala Arjuna Trees, text number 40. Word meaning, Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, said, Gyatam, everything is known, mama, to me, pura, in the past, eva, indeed, etat, this incident, rishina, by the great sage Narada, Karuna Atmana, because he was very, very kind to you. Yet, which? Sri Mada Antayo, who had become mad after material opulence and had thus become blind. Vagbi, by words or by cursing. Vibhrangsha, falling down from the heavenly planet to become Arjuna trees here. Anugraha Krita, this was a great favor done by him to you. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Gyatam Mama Purai Vaitad, Rishina Karunatmana, Yat Sri Madandhayor Bhagbhir, Vibhrangsho Nugraha Krita. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Gyatam Mama Purai Vaitad, Rishina Karunatmana, Yat Sri Madandhayor Vagbhir, Vibhrangsho Nugraha Krita. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Gyatam Mama Purai Vaitad, Rishina Karunatmana, Yat Sri Madandhayor Vagbhir, Vibhrangsho Nugraha Krita. Gyatam Mama Purai Vaitad, Rishina Karunatmana, Mama Purai Vaitad, Nishina Karunatmana, Yat Sri Madandayo Vagbhir, Vibhrangsho Nugraha Krita. Yata Mama Purai Vaitad, Rishina Karunatmana, Yat Sri Madandayo Vagbhir, ladies. Yata Mama Purai Vaitad, Rishina Karunatmana, Yat Sri Madandayor Vagbhir, Vibhrangsho Nugraha Krita. Translation: the Supreme Personality of Godhead said, the great saint Narada Muni is very merciful. By his curse, he showed the greatest favor to both of you, who were mad after material opulence and who had thus become blind. Although you fell from the higher planet Swargaloka and became trees, you were most favored by him. I knew all of these incidents from the very beginning. Srila Prabhupada's purport. It is now confirmed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead that the curse of a devotee is also to be regarded as mercy. As Krishna, God is all good, a Vaishnava is also all good. Whatever he does is good for everyone. This is explained in the following verse. Om jnana timirantasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshur unmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. We say this prayer, the beginning of the Mangalacharana. Om jnana timirantasya jnananjana shalakaya. Who says we were born in ignorance? I was born in ignorance. Timirantasya. Timir means tamas, darkness or ignorance. And andha means blindness. So here it says that the Nalakuvera Manigriva, they were enjoying in the heavenly planets, and they became blind. What does it say? They became blind. Srimada Antayo, they became mad, mada, and blind. Well, Shri means opulence. Srimada Antayo, because of material opulence, enjoyment of material opulence, they became blind, as Prabhupada said. They had become mad after material opulence and had thus become blind. So they apparently had been able to see at some point. Of course, this idea of seeing, we use the word even in ordinary talk. We say, you see? We mean, you understand? So this blindness, of course, there's literal blindness when you actually you can't see with your eyes. But there's blindness, which means you can't see in the metaphorical sense. You can't understand something. So this, of course, blindness is a very frightening condition. Sometimes I imagine it, what it would be like, especially if you're a seeing person already, and then later in life you become blind. How scary that must be. Your whole world changes. You're so used to sort of living outside yourself. But then that's all gone. All that visual stimulation is gone. In neuroscience today, of course, they study these things, brain science, the effects of different things like that. Of course, everyone is familiar with the idea that people who become blind, they tend to be able to hear better. Their hearing becomes very finely attuned. Their other senses become more finely attuned. And one explanation the scientists have is that we have only so much brain computing power. And all that computing power that was used for visual is now turned over to auditory and other aspects, the way our mind works. So, in any case, when we become blind, it can become, of course, a very fearful situation also. It's like the whole world becomes shut in, you might say, shut in on you. Instead of the expansiveness, when you have vision, you can see so far beyond. So everything becomes like closed in. You're very, your freedom is very much curtailed in certain ways. So similarly with spiritual blindness or the inability to see things as they are, it's debilitating. And we think of blindness as a handicap. It's debilitating. Debilitating means you're bound up more. You have less control, less ability to do things. So similarly with spiritual blindness, we have less ability. We're debilitated. Of course, in our condition in material consciousness, we don't know. We don't even understand that we're blind, or we're at least we're blind to so many things. In fact, we're basically blind to everything because we're blind to reality. We see this world, but we're not really seeing what's there. So that's a kind of blindness too, because we think we're seeing what's actually there, but we're not. There's so much that we're missing. We know, of course, in ordinary, it's another, in science, we know how, just like some of you may know that every one of our eyes has a blind spot. There's a blind spot in our vision. I think it's where the retina attaches to the whatever, something or other. It has something to do with the physical structure of the eye. We all have blind spots. But because the way our brain works, it just kind of gets filled in by our brains. So we're able to somehow see something that the vision is not actually there, but the mind kind of fills it in. So we all have a blind spot, but we don't even realize it. So the fact is we all have major blind spots. There are so many things that we don't see, and we don't even realize that we don't see. Or another way to put it is that we're in ignorance and we don't even realize it. Of course, that's one definition of ignorance, isn't it? You don't know. Not only do you not know, but you don't know that you don't know. In the military, they talk about there was a famous phrase by the Secretary of Defense, Donald Rumsfeld. He was teased for it because he said, "We have known unknowns and unknown unknowns." He said. So people thought, "What is this jugglery of words he's talking about here?" Though in some sense it's true. We know that we don't know, for example, how many weapons the enemy has or whatever. But there's so many things that are unknown to us, and we don't even know that we should know about them. Just like 9/11, it was for most people just kind of came completely out of the blue. Something we never even thought of before, that someone would do this. So there's a kind of ignorance where we don't even know that we're in ignorance. So our whole material life really is made up of this. We don't know that we're supposed to know something. We've forgotten it so completely. We have no awareness of it whatsoever. And we can also become convinced that this is all there is. There is no other thing. We're so ignorant of it, we completely deny it. I find that when I'm reading about like scientific things, I like to see what they're up to. So one thing I've noticed is that they have such conviction. Some of them. They have such conviction, especially in evolution, that is just the explanation. And if you don't accept it, you're living on another planet. What is wrong with you? How can you not believe it? You're just so ignorant. Huh? Why don't you face up to the truth that this is the reality? So they have that conviction very deeply. And they have no conception whatsoever. I was reading a book on consciousness one time. Because consciousness is also, admittedly, even by scientists, this is the biggest problem. This is something in Sariputta Prabhu would often come back to in his science preaching. That this is really a difficult one. Scientists think they can explain so many things, but consciousness, they really haven't come up with a good explanation for it. So I was reading a book about consciousness. And one thing that the author said was, we have to admit that not everyone perceives things in the same ways or understands things. In other words, some people can understand things that other people can't understand. We have to admit that. So there may be, he was proposing, that there are people who have insights into consciousness that ordinary scientists don't have. So I was like, wow, all right. That's what we say, yes. Especially those who are dedicating themselves to that pursuit. That's really what yoga is about, isn't it? It's getting in touch with consciousness itself, with being itself, with who we really are. So this is a realm that's completely hidden from most people. It's invisible to them. And so it's so much so that they say, well, it doesn't even exist. It's just a fantasy. It's not even there. But we, of course, we know that, well, you can hear about these things at least. That helps. You get a start. At least if you start hearing about it, then you start thinking, oh, maybe there is something there. Maybe this does make sense. Or if you have eyewitness testimony, the Bhagavatam is filled with eyewitness testimony of devotees who have, and yogis and so on, great sages, who have some experience of something else. Just like Narada Muni, he tells his story. So he experienced something amazing, and he talked about it, and other devotees too. So these kings can help one to get some initial conviction, though. Maybe there is something different. Maybe I am an ignorant. Maybe there is a whole other world that I don't know anything about. Prabhupada one would sometimes say, just because you're blind doesn't mean I'm blind. Just because you can't see, that doesn't mean nobody can see. There are people who can see, and you can learn from them. So that's what we're trying to do, of course. We're trying to learn from someone who can see. Agyanati mirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chukshurun militamena tasmai shri gurave namaha. This prayer actually has several metaphors in it. It says that the jnana, dibya jnana, transcendental knowledge, is like an ointment. Jnana anjana. Anjana means an ointment. So you spread that ointment of jnana, which means, of course, jnana about Krishna. And then you can see. Then your vision can be cured by that. You smear that ointment of transcendental knowledge on your vision. So, of course, it's not that we're literally taking some kind of blessed ointment, buy it in the store, and it's, you know, eye-opening. You rub this on your eyes, and you'll be able to see God. Maybe we market something like that. Maybe it would sell. People are so foolish. But we're not talking about that kind of ointment. We're talking about transcendental knowledge. It's an ointment that comes in the form of hearing, actually. This reminds me of another neuroscientific thing. There are people that are called, they have a thing called synesthesia. Synesthesia means you hear in color, or your senses are able to do more than one thing. Many people have this. Not many, but quite a few people have this kind of thing, where their senses can do multiple kinds of things. So when they hear a particular sound, or even different objects have certain colors to them, or qualities have certain colors, or spaces of time, like a week for some people is red, and a month is blue, and a year is yellow, or something. So they have these kinds of things go on. So the mind makes these connections. So it's sort of like in the, I always forget, Madhurya Kadambini, I think it is, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, talks about, because he raises the question, well, Krishna is so, because he's infinite, what happens to my senses when I see Krishna? Do they just become overwhelmed? And in a sense, they do. All of the senses, they just become overwhelmed and filled, and they take on characteristics that we don't necessarily experience in this world. Of course, because they're not ordinary senses. We think of a sensual experience in the way that we experience it now or perceive it now. But when the spiritual senses interact with these sense objects, then there's no limitation what goes on. Just like it said about Krishna in the Brahma Samhita, Angani yasya sakalendriya vritti manti. It says that each of Krishna's limbs can perform the occupation. Vritti means occupation. Indriya vritti manti. They possesses the occupation of each of the other limbs. So that's why we say Krishna can see with his nose and hear with his eyes and so on. He can taste with his eyes. So he can do all of these things. So the spiritual senses, they act in extraordinary ways. So hearing transcendental sound enables us to see better. Something's going in our ears, but it improves our vision. So, of course, it's not immediately that we can see everything. There's a sort of gradual recovery of our vision. We can see certain things. Sometimes we say we're in knowledge, but the spiritual master gives us knowledge because we understand the categories of things. We understand the nature of reality. We know that there's God, there's a material world. We know that we're jivas, that we're subordinate to Krishna, these kinds of things. But there's still so many things we don't know. We're given help, but there's a gradual awakening, self-realization. One thing I think about a lot, and I often mention in class, there's so many things I don't understand. For example, we talk about our progress in Krishna consciousness as a progress of bhakti, the progression that we go from ado, shraddha, sadhu, sangha, bhajana, kriya, and so on. We go through these different steps of attachment to Krishna because that's really what we're concerned about. So I have a question, where does Brahman realize, where does Aham Brahmasmi fit into that scenario? When do I realize that I'm not this body? At exactly what point along the spectrum does that come in, that I realize I'm not this body, I understand that I'm not this body, really actually understand Aham Brahmasmi? So that will come at some point in this progress, in this progression. I remember there was one reporter asked Prabhupada, you know, how did you get these people to follow you? And Prabhupada said, I told them that if they chant Hare Krishna, they will become self-realized. And they accepted this. That's why they're chanting Hare Krishna. So if you chant Hare Krishna, you'll become self-realized. So that's what we're doing, but are we there yet? The ignorance is going away, and the more we hear. And there's also, of course, there's our literal understanding of what we're reading. And then there's a realization of what we're reading. That's why we can read the same things over and over again. And gradually, maybe, we hope, it'll become more clear to us. We'll get it. If you're dull-headed, then you can hear something over, it takes a long time sometimes for it to sink in. You don't get it until you hear it repeatedly. Then finally, oh, now I get it. The light comes on. Oh, yeah. You have the aha experience. Aha. Oh, yeah. Now I get it. So that will come in time. But now, there's still so many things. One thing I've been thinking about recently, I was thinking, psychologically, something happened when I hit 60. I started thinking of old age a lot more. So, there was definitely a little switch that churned. Uh-oh. Now it's really... I mean, it's really going to happen. I can't deny this anymore. It's really going to happen. So one thing I was thinking about is I really don't know exactly what's going to happen at death. One, you know, I may go back to Krishna if I'm somehow lucky to remember Krishna. And then there are places where Prabhupada says you close your eyes and you wake up and you're immediately with Krishna. So let's think about some lower state where that doesn't happen. Then what's going to happen to me? When that change goes, when I move from this realm of consciousness where I'm identifying with this body, and especially at the time of death, I'm probably going to be identifying it pretty strongly. When the thing starts going haywire, and you know, you can really freak out. Sometimes people really freak out at the time of death. They become scared. They don't know what's going to happen. And you start losing control, you're losing your breathing. It's a very scary thing, at least to me when I think about it. Even there's that verse by Kulashekar. He says, I want to die now because I know that when things start happening at death, that I'm just going to go, I don't know if I'm going to be able to remember you. I'm going to be so scared. So what's going to happen at that point where I cross over? What's going to happen to my ahankar? This is a question I have. Right now, my ahankar, my identification is I'm a middle-aged American man. So as soon as my soul leaves this body, then what am I going to be thinking? Who am I going to be thinking I am then? Am I still going to be thinking I'm an American man? And this is the experience that I'm having now? And what is that experience too? What's it going to be like? Is it going to be completely disorienting? Where I'm going to be going like, whoa, what happened? Where am I? Okay, am I going to completely forget where I just came from, that I just died and I just left those people behind? Or there seems to be some indication that we know that there are certain rituals done, Vedic rituals, to so that the soul will get away from there, because the soul sometimes wants to hover around the body or the crematorium ghat. There, people say, at least they experience, there are a lot of ghosts there. So maybe there's some ability to hang around if you want to, because you're so attached. So that would indicate that maybe there's some memory of that. Or do we go to some completely different situation in a subtle realm? We don't have a lot of teachings about the subtle realm, what goes on there. The Akash, sometimes it's talked about, referred to. What's going to happen? Am I going to be completely disoriented? I won't know how I got there. Or when I leave this body, am I going to, now I understand. I'm not this body. Oh, that body I just left. Now I'm going to go into another body. Am I going to have that understanding? Of course, we hear in the Bhagavatam that the soul, it says some fortunate soul will pray to Krishna in the womb. Or it says the fortunate soul. So that's a little ambiguous, that phrase. Does it mean that every soul is fortunate and he prays to God because he's fortunate at that moment? Or is it a special soul who's fortunate that prays because he's given remembrance somehow by Krishna's mercy or because of practice and during his lifetime he's given the ability to remember Krishna within the womb? I tend to think that it's that one. A soul that gets special mercy. Not every soul within every, taking a human birth, prays to Krishna. In any case, he forgets. What happens even in that scenario, as soon as the soul leaves the womb, is born, then that's again another whole world of change. Everything is forgotten, completely forgotten. Sometimes there may be some memories that are recovered somehow or spontaneously, there's some remembrance of previous life, but generally not. So does that happen instantaneously at the time of death? Then what am I thinking then? Who am I? What am I identifying with? Who am I thinking that I am if I have to go to hell and suffer there? And do I remember all the bad things I did to get me here? So these, now maybe in some Purana that I don't know, Garuda Purana maybe talks about things like this. I don't know. I haven't read all the Vedic literature. Maybe there are places where these things are described in more detail. But there's also we know that certain things, we have to experience them to understand them. Yet they can't be, even in the Vedas, there are places that talk about how God, for example, is beyond words, the spiritual, that other realm is beyond words. Because our ordinary words, we have certain ways of understanding them. Even in ordinary communication, you don't hear 100% what I'm trying to transmit. There's always our own minds interfere somehow with the reception of everything. So in hearing the Vedic sounds also, there's always some interference because of our conditioning. So that's why we have to become more and more purified, and then we hear more and more clearly. Then the sound comes through more clearly, and then the impact is felt more powerfully. So the only solution to our ignorance, therefore, is to repeatedly hear and become purified. Become purified more and more, and to get away from this seed of madness and blindness that's described in this verse here. Chasing after the things of this world, the things that we, there's one place where Prabhupada describes Maya's illusory energy meant to distract the living entities from their real business of self-realization. So that's what Maya does. She distracts us. We're supposed to be looking for something, but we're always being distracted. Just like children, you send them from, one place to the next and they can't get there because there are too many things happening in between. They get distracted. So we're supposed to have our goal in sight, going back to Godhead, attaining Krishna Prema. But there are so many distractions. We may lose sight. And be so distracted, we may lose sight completely. Become completely blind as far as the real goal of life is concerned. That's why we always have to Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya, constantly remind ourselves, realize our One time Prabhupada was asked, does one become determined and serious? And Prabhupada says, to understand how far you have to go and what little time you have to get there. So this is our practice, to try to get there, to fill the time so that we can get to the goal before this life ends. Well, this verse again. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Gyatam Mama Purai Vaitad, Rishina Karunatmana, Yat Sri Madan Thayor Vagpir, Vibrangsho Nugraha Kritaha. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, the great saint Narada Muni is very merciful. By his curse, he showed the greatest favor to both of you, who were mad after material opulence and who had thus become blind. Although you fell from the highest planet, Swargaloka, and became trees, you were most favored by him. I knew all of these incidents from the very beginning. Any questions or comments? Dharmaraj Prabhu? Is the microphone on there? Not working. How does it positively or negatively affect us not to know all of these things? Yeah, it may have been a little misleading to suggest that it's important to know, because maybe it's not important. I was just stating the fact that I am in ignorance of so many things. So one reason I'm ignorant of some of these things, even theoretically, what to speak of having perception of them, it's because Prabhupada didn't emphasize them. He didn't tell us all the details of all of these things. So that would seem to imply that they're not that. It's not that important to know exactly. Or maybe we can't know. Maybe they can't be explained because of the difference. It's such a different world that we'll be entering into. So, but as far as, you know, the Siddhanta Bulya Chitte Nakara Alas, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, don't be lazy in understanding Siddhanta, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Because understanding the philosophy of Krishna consciousness actually helps you become Krishna conscious. It strengthens the mind for remembering Krishna. We know the mind is a muscle. Even materially, this is understood, that as you use it, this is one of the prescriptions against dementia and Alzheimer's, is to do exercises. Try to use your mind. Keep it active. So, similarly, if we want to remember Krishna, so we use our mind and our intelligence in thinking of Krishna-conscious things. So that's, we're trying to remove our ignorance in that way. So as far as the particular specific things, details of how this material world works and so on, it may not be so important. But it is important to always be applying our minds to the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, because that increases our conviction, which in turn strengthens our practice and our determination to practice Krishna consciousness. So it's important in that sense. Yes, Bhakti Bhav.
My mother, and it was all still new to me, even though I had studied some of, on death and dying of which we will all go. But one of the things they shared with me, as they said, and she was doing this, is that there comes a point toward the end where the human being kicks into the patterns of the life that they've been living for so many years, and they want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they know they're dying, they know they're ill, they're on these, you know, they pump them full of morphine, but still they get up and they want to go to work. And she was doing that, you know, she was like, I'm saying, what, you know, they called me and I had to rush there, and they said, one of the things is that as toward the end is you will want to start to do things again that you did in your life. And one of the things she did is she wanted to go to work, and she was sitting there going, you know, Bobby, I want to go to work. Bobby, you know, get me dressed, get me this, you know. So you've compared that, and I'm not in the least bit as highly knowledgeable yet, but it just seems right and practical that, and I see it, is you just keep practicing Krishna consciousness, because there's going to come a time where will that kick in,
mm-hmm.
where, okay, I want to, you know, rather than, okay, I got to go to work, I want to go to work, I want to go to work, mm-hmm. is I want to go to Krishna, I want to go back to Godhead, I want to chant, I want to do, and I can see how hard that can be, because all these years we've been brought up with, get up, go to work, get up, go to work, get up, go to work. And I just want to also give you a compliment, is you're not that old yet, okay?
I came across a saying. I looked to see, I heard it somewhere, and I said, where did this come from? So I looked it up on the Google. It's from the philosopher, Chinese philosopher Lao Tzu. So he says, be careful what you think, because thoughts become actions, actions become habits, habits become character, and character becomes destiny. So as you were speaking, I was thinking of this, because that's what's going to happen. She's habituated. This is what she understood as life, was going to work and so on. And now that's going to end. So there's also this fear that, well, I'm going to be leaving all of this, and I'm not going to be able to do this again. So as death comes, then you want to hold on to that. But for us, whatever we're doing, we can do right up to death, chanting Hare Krishna. We want to do more of it as the time comes. So a habit, is probably what we say, habit. We make that our habit by our thoughts. We think about Krishna. Then our habits become actions. We act for Krishna. We become habits. That's something I've noticed over the span of my years in Krishna consciousness, is how, you know, you develop habits. We certainly develop habits, and they kind of become automatic. So we can develop good habits or bad habits. So we try to develop good habits, and that forms our character over time. It makes us who we are, you might say. And that, who we are, becomes our destiny, who we will become, what will happen to us in the future. That's another thing I was thinking. That, you know, the future is, we're all ignorant of the future in certain ways. We really don't know what's going to happen. We're blind to that. We also really don't know what happened in the past, and except for in a very kind of a general way, we know something. So we maybe know a little something about what's going on right now, but we tend to be blind about so many things. But we do know that how we act, at least we have this conviction from Shastra, that we can have faith that my future is going to be better, it's going to be good, because of the habits and character that I'm developing now, which is determining my destiny, my future. So I always think of this line in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, one should not be afraid of death. It's in the context of Parikshit Maharaj leaving this world. One should not be afraid of death. So I was thinking, that's not an easy thing to do, not to be afraid of death. But of course, where does that overcoming fear that comes from? Being convinced that, no, I'm the servant of Krishna. I'm serving Krishna. Krishna is going to take care of me. That's what it comes down to. It's just like the sannyasi is supposed to be able to go out into the middle of the forest and meditate and not be afraid that he's going to be eaten by a tiger or a snake or something. Because he thinks, no, Krishna's here with me. Krishna's within my heart. He's going to protect me. So not being afraid of death means I'm going with Krishna. Krishna's going to be with me as I pass on. He's going to be with me on the other side. He's with me now. I'm chanting his holy name. That's where the fearfulness comes from. The abhaya. Shoka moha bhaya paha. Bhaktirupajyate panta shoka moha bayapaha. Vyasadeva says that by bhakti, you cross over shoka, moha, and bhaya, lamentation, illusion, and fear. So we can be not afraid of death if we're Krishna conscious. That's the answer, of course. So we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.